Thanks, Shane. Thank you very much. Good afternoon. On this Wednesday afternoon, how are you? If you want to contact the programme, 51551 for your texts, you can send us emails to ray@rte.ie. A couple of emails to get to in a moment, but first, a bit of the Dalai Lama. Just a little bit of calm. We needed just a little bit of calm. Yeah, we told you about it a few weeks ago. He turned 85 on Monday, and to celebrate it, he released an album. Did the Dalai Lama. It's been reviewed, it has. Yes, here, there and everywhere. The Times, that's the London Times, called it an odourless gas of an album. Is that like water? Is that what they're saying there? That's not a very nice thing to say about the Dalai Lama. What's he ever done to you? And they go on to say, it certainly makes a case for sticking to what you are best at, which in the Dalai Lama's case is being a living god. The Independent said little to distinguish the shapeless instrumentation from any you'd find in a luxury spa. That's not very nice. The NME, they know more about their music. They were more positive, describing it as exactly the uncynical balm we all need right now. Ah, yes, the Dalai Lama. So you might recognise that. That's the Sanskrit mantra, Om Mani Padme Hum. It's one of the most famous Buddhist prayers. And that's the Dalai Lama. Om Mani Padme Hum. And he's quoted as saying about the album, the very purpose of my life is to serve as much as I can. Music can help people in a way that I can't. Boom. And in a sort of a tongue-in-cheek piece in The Guardian today, what the Dalai Lama is most likely to say, love and compassion are necessities, not luxuries. Without them, humanity cannot survive. And he's least likely to say, where are the groupies? It's available now to download and buy and all those sort of things. Dave on Sound says it sounds like Je T'aime. Yeah. What was your man's name? Burke and Gainsborough. Not them, two of them. Jane Burke and Serge Gainsborough. Thank you very much. We used to play that, the slow sets down the CY in Kildare. Everyone used to think it was, people would giggle and go, oh, you're very naughty playing that. Was it ever banned? I'm sure it was banned. ray@rte.ie. I forgot to mention yesterday that about the whole staycation thing. And an email first, and then I'll get to the staycation, because Mairead was on to it. She says, like many Irish people, I was due to travel abroad for a few days this summer with my husband. Then COVID-19 struck, and for the safety of our family and grandparents, I chose to do the right thing and not travel. The decision was hugely based on the current advice from the Department of Foreign Affairs of do not travel abroad for non-essential travel. Like tens of thousands of other travellers, I tried to see what options I had so I wouldn't lose the €500 I had spent with Ryanair, because Ryanair would only allow me to spend more money to change flights, and only then, up to March of next year, I was left with no option but to not fly. The flight left Dublin for Spain on Tuesday without us on it. I lost the €500, and I've since contacted Ryanair and suggested they can donate the €500 to a charity of their choice. Unlikely to happen, right? And I see there's a full page ad in the papers today from the Department of, I suppose it's from the Government of Ireland, Department of Transport, travel advice. And in one section it goes, people living in Ireland, all of us who live in Ireland are asked not, and not is in capital letters, not to undertake any non-essential overseas travel this year. So please, holiday at home in 2020. And it goes on to answer some of the questions you might have. It doesn't answer any of the questions around refunding. And we always knew that if the flight took off, as Mairead's flight did yesterday, that you can't do anything about it. They've lost the €500. Nice suggestion to Ryanair that they donate the €500 to charity, but as I say, highly unlikely. So we're all stuck on this island for the summer. And they said in that holiday at home in 2020, that's till the end of December. So unless they change, and things have changed over the last while, didn't they? They said we wouldn't be allowed to travel around the country until July 20th, and then they changed it to June 29th. So that might change. But anyway, for the moment, we're holidaying at home. We're holidaying at home. And as I said yesterday when talking to Frankie Sheehan, we have a lot to offer as a country. The caveat is that there may not be enough accommodation to sort us all out, but there's lots of things to do. Loads of lovely food, loads of brilliant scenery, loads of places to go. And every place is within, you know, 3 or 4 hours drive. And the brilliant thing about driving on your holidays, you can just pack everything. In fact, it's probably a negative in that you don't impose any discipline on yourself. So everything goes in. Kitchen sink, dog. The winter coach. You never know. The winter coach, yeah. The full vinyl collection. You never know who might pop around. All the DVDs. What if the Wi-Fi goes down? We leave the DVDs. Put them in as well. Yeah, everything. Yeah. What else do we need? 3 footballs, trampoline. Yeah. It all goes into the car. You drive off. I was just thinking that it's a perfect opportunity to do something like Ireland's best fish and chips, you know, because there are going to be people travelling all over the country and they're going to be sampling fish and chips. That's what you do, don't you? When you're on holidays, you get fish and chips. Or maybe Ireland's best chowder. I had chowder the other day, which is something I associate with holidays. And it's not something I'd make at home. You wouldn't make chowder at home. So I remember seeing Kevin Dundon. He made chowder for us once. We were down in Dingle doing a radio show. And the amount of cream and butter he put into it, when I saw it going in, I went, bleh. But when I tasted it, wow, something special. And then the lovely chunky bits of cod and smoked haddock and salmon. You might get an odd prawn if you're lucky. A bit of scallop. Yum, yum, yum. Ireland's best chowder. There's something about it. And the great thing about it is in the middle of the day, you know, you just have your chowder and a bit of brown bread. You don't need anything else till dinner. Lovely. Then you have your fish and chips from the local chipper. I think we might do something next week just to direct you to places, you know, because there are sort of hidden gems around the country that you wouldn't know about. I remember passing by a sign, and I never explored it because I was always going somewhere, but there's a Tin Soldier Museum somewhere between Killarney and Cork, isn't there? Around Fermoy, Mallow area. Those sort of things, they're all over the country. And we might give people an opportunity to advertise their wares. Things that people can do when they're staycating. If you have the best chowder, if you have the best fish and chips, if you have the best Tin Soldier Museum or whatever you might have, we might work something into the show for the next few weeks to give people a national platform to advertise their wares. What about that? That's not a bad idea. Yeah, we might do that. Good news in the Post when I came back from holidays yesterday. A €40 one for all voucher from Zurich. Hey, there you go. I'm a car insurance with Zurich, and because people weren't travelling around and couldn't travel around during the lockdown, they decided that they'd compensate you, reimburse you. I don't know what the official word is. They are calling it your stay at home saving. What am I going to do with the €40 one for all gift card? You can't pass it on because there's a big Zurich logo on it. People would know. What do you think? I don't know. Any suggestions there? Maybe give it away. Give it away, yeah. You can't buy chowder with it. That's the only thing. I don't see any restaurants here. I'm just looking at the list of places you can shop with it. Tesco is there. Halfords. Power City. H&M. TK Maxx. Argus. DID Electrical. A great Irish-run shop. Golden Discs, great Irish run shop. Eason, great Irish run shop. They're all there. Give it away. We might give it away by the end of the show. See how we go. The app update. We were saying yesterday that it's important that as many people as possible download the COVID tracker app, because tracking and tracing are going to beat this virus. And all of the experts seem to believe that there's going to be a second wave, and it has happened in other countries. We saw what happened in Melbourne over the weekend. So we need to download this app. 935,000 people in Ireland have downloaded the app. And that's brilliant news. In about 36 hours, 935,000. Now, we need to get it up to 2 million on my calculations to make it effective. Anything below that, and it's not really effective. So 2 million. And the great thing about it is when you download the app, you see you can send it on to somebody else. So if everybody who downloads the app sends it on to five people in their contact list who they think may not have downloaded it already. Then we have a lovely positive contagion going on. Beat the virus at its own game. So let's get that going. Let's get that going. 2 million we want. We're 935,000. 2 million. And with these things, there's always an initial surge, isn't there? So we need to keep the energy going and get it up to 2 million. Come on, we can do that. We can do that. And we'll get back onto UNA and the HSE and see if at 4:30 what the update is. So it's 935,000. Let's see how many people download it between now and then. If there's one thing you do today, download that app. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. And it's the cool people, you know, the cool people are downloading that app, yes. Look at John as he runs through the meadow in his lovely shorts and his pastel t-shirt. He has downloaded the app. And what about Mary with her three children? Ah, oh, look at them, on the beach, building sandcastles. Mary has downloaded the app and she has sent out the five of her contacts. Thank you, Mary. Thank you very much. Ah, oh, there's Fred. Ah, Fred, the local postman. Always gives you a wave and a smile. Ah, yes, in his uniform. He's downloaded the app. Thanks, Fred. And he's sent it on to five of his contacts. He's a lot of contacts in his phone, does Fred. Thank you all. There you go. That's the little lad there. I thought it was a wasted opportunity there. They have a full page thing on travel advice and the app isn't mentioned at all. They could have just said download the app somewhere in the corner there. If they're paying that much money to a national newspaper to advertise, they could have got an ad for the app in there as well. Anyway, 5 on 5, 5 on RadRT.ie. On the Dalai Lama, Patricia Ney says, thank you for telling me what that chant was. I thought he was saying, oh, my little lemon. Oh, my little lemon. I don't... Does it sound like that? It does, yes. Oh, my little lemon. Oh, my little lemon. There you go. Up in Donegal on holidays, pouring rain, but happy with my daughter, having a great laugh. Very proud to share a birthday with Dalai Lama. Without kindness in your heart, you have nothing, says Patrick. I've recommended this book to you. It's a great read. It's the Dalai Lama in conversation with, I think his name is Ivor Cutler, and it's called The Art of Happiness. And Ivor Cutler is a famous American psychiatrist. So it's the sort of the science of mental health versus the spiritual Dalai Lama Buddhist version of it. And great conversation, and they've a lot more in common than you would think. But obviously the psychiatrist tries to tease out why Buddhism works so well for some people. Seafood chowder looks too much like what adult gannets feed their young. Saw it too many times not to mentally associate the two, says Eric the Birdman Dempsey. You'll be interested in our first guest today, Eric the Birdman Dempsey. Nancy's Barn in Ballyliffin in Donegal previously won world champion chowder. Aha. Best name for a chipper that I've seen anywhere is Chish and Phipps in Crosshaven. Yeah, we were down visiting the East Pier down Dunmore East the other night, and there were so many people there and there was such a run that went up fish and chips. Well, we've no chips. All right. And we've no fish either. It was brilliant the way they said it, because they didn't say we've no fish and chips. They said we've no chips and then we've no fish. So then you've no fish and chips and you're a fish and chipper. With diced potatoes, it's yum and less heavy. This is the chowder. In kosher cooking, they never mix dairy and protein. Didn't know that, Linda Heffernan. It all sounds great, but the elephant in the room is the weather. I love this country, but it's always the weather. Well, they're saying it's going to be fine at the weekend and maybe settled into next week as well. That's what the lady said on the radio when I listened to her the other day. Liam says, it would be great to holiday at home this year, but the reality is, unless you have deep pockets, most families can't afford to rent a house for a week. My wife was quoted €1,600 for a house in Kerry. That's out of reach for most families. We are being fleeced, says Liam. So there you go. Yeah, 51551 ray@rte.ie. Good afternoon. Adele, hello from the other side. The reason I play that is that the BBC showed the best bits of Glastonbury last weekend. They showed that. It was an amazing performance by Adele. It was sort of a homecoming, and she was brilliant and she was alive and she was irreverent and she was all those things. And then her dress went viral after it. I can't remember what they said about it. Let's see what you were saying. 5155 on redrt.ie. You got more than me. I got €30 voucher from RSA Insurance's Kath. And Paul says he's definitely saying, oh, Miss Moneypenny, in true James Bond style. This is of the Dalai Lama.
Neville.
At a stretch, Paul. At a big stretch. Betty's Benign says, I've tried and tried on my iPhone. When I download the app, the tracker app, it says not available in your region. I did buy my phone in the USA. However, I have regions set to Ireland. Shout out to techies to help, please. So if you can help Betty there, bought the phone in the USA and she has regions set to Ireland, but still the tracker, COVID tracker won't download. Mick and Mead says, can you tell John he won't be running through any meadows today with his shorts on? It's lashing rain. That's Mick and Mead. And two adults and two children, 7 days, including breakfast, Killarney Hotel, special offer, 4,600. Staycation right, says that person. Yeah, that sounds like a lot of cash. If anyone knows who came up with that staycation word, can you name and shame them, please? It's the most annoying non-Irish word ever. It's not even American, because vacations in the US are normal for Americans. We go on holiday at home or abroad. And don't get me started on cupcakes versus buns and chickens versus hens and all the rest. There's my rant. Down with that sort of thing, says that person. Staycation, you're right, because it's vacation, isn't it? We don't go on vacations here, we go on holidays. A stoliday. It's a stoliday, then. That's my attempt at it. A stoliday. You're going on a stoliday. Everyone's going on stolidays this year. Surely somebody can come up with a better word than stoliday or staycation. I'll tell you what I'll do, and it's Neil's suggestion, it's a brilliant suggestion, that whoever comes up with the best replacement word for staycation gets my Zurich €40 one for all voucher. There you go. That'll get you going. So a replacement word for staycation or stoliday. That's the best we can do so far. And €40 in it for you. 51551 for your suggestions. Now, today we start the semi-final stages of the All-Ireland Quiz. Four counties remain. So let's do the draw on this one. And we have your man from KPMG here just to make sure everything's above board. Oh, no, we don't. Oh, sorry, he wasn't available. Sorry about that. Sorry, yeah, I thought we did. Okay, so here we go, very quickly. So who's on today then in the first semi-final? Bernard Curley, representing Louth, will take on Mary Carter, representing Kildare. So it's an all-Leinster semi-final today. Louth versus Kildare, Bernard versus Mary. And then tomorrow, it's Lorraine Bailey from Wicklow, and she takes on yesterday's winner, Colette Bailey from Down. So there you go, the lineup for the semi-finals of the All-Ireland Quiz. Louth v Kildare, Wicklow v Down.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Right, so a lot of people don't like the word staycation. Too American. Not Irish enough. We're looking for an alternative, and we have €40 for the best suggestion. Holiday at home, says Neil. It's not one word, Neil. Irish adventure, not one word. Fon Awalia, says Niall Kelly. Arladay, says Sean O'Neill and Ruski. How are you doing, Sean? How about home halls? Somebody else who's not getting involved at all. Soggy days, paycation. And then one that has come in a number of times, and I don't know which one came in first, because Catherine Ronan said it, so too did Gemma. Holliday. Holliday sounds like an American brand for teenagers. I love your Holliday sweatshirt there. Now, keep them coming in, 51551. An incredible photo in today's Daily Mail of a puffin with a mouthful of fish in its beak. I don't know if you've seen it. There's about, I can count about 9 fish in a row there in the puffin's beak. It was taken on the Salty Islands in Wexford about 2 weeks ago by amateur wildlife photographer Clodagh Blake, who's on the line now. How are you doing, Clodagh?
Hi, Ray. How are you?
Good to talk to you. I'm good. How are you?
I'm fine. Fine, thanks.
Yeah, well,
I didn't expect to be talking to you today.
Well, here you are, and here I am, and there's the puffin, and there's the fish. It's a brilliant photo, because he not only is, you know, the act of the fish in the mouth and all that, but it looks like the puffin's looking at you. Isn't that important?
He is, yeah. I went to Salty Islands there about 2 weeks ago, and I go every year. It's an annual trip for me, and it's the one photograph that all photographers want to get.
Yeah,
and I was on the island for 5 minutes, and this puffin flew in with full to the gills, in his mouth with these sand eels, and I start shooting straight away, because you're on a timer. Once they come in to land, they go straight into the burrows, and you have that time frame to get your shot.
Yeah, and you got it.
I got loads of photos that day.
Yeah, you must be the envy of... I'm sure there were professionals there who didn't get as good a photo.
There was about 8 or 9 of us there at the same time when he came in, like, so I presume they got shots.
Yeah.
But I don't know, did he get anything similar to mine? I know John Holden now got a shot similar to mine there about 3 weeks ago before I went out.
Right. It's fantastic. What's your story? Is it something you do as a hobby?
It's a hobby. It's my pastime. It's my time to go out and I switch off when I'm out with nature. It's kind of meditation for me.
And it involves a big investment of time, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. Patience is the key to wildlife photography. If you don't have it, do you know what I mean? You're at nothing.
Yeah.
I could give 8 or 9 hours sitting waiting for it to get that shot like that. And some days I come home and I mightn't get anything. Do you know what I mean? It's luck as well, and it's patience.
Where does your head go when you're waiting for a puffin or a fox or something like that for 8 hours? Where does your head go?
I just completely switch off and I'm in tune, sitting and waiting there, like, you know, stay still as possible, like, you know, winter hide, like, and sit and wait, you know, it's a waiting game.
It's nearly like meditation.
Some other times they will.
Yeah, it's really like meditation, is it, Clodagh?
It is, yeah. You know, I'm entwined with nature. I'm completely switched off. Once I get into my car and go on my camera, I'm switched off. I'm switched off, from everything else.
Yeah.
My focus is on getting that shot at the end of the day, like.
I believe people have told you that you have a gift with animals.
Yeah, I've been told that. Yeah, I was told that by a fortune teller as well. I was, you know... And my late grandmother, she even told me, like, you know, maybe she's still looking down at me today, like, you know, I don't know. But she always told me to keep pursuing my photography.
Yeah. What sort of things have happened to you over the years that suggest that you have some sort of gift?
I suppose it's just there, my photography, like, you know.
Yeah.
You know, it's the recognition for it then as well, like, you know. I could be out in all weathers, like, you know.
I believe you. I'm looking at a lovely picture of a fox in the snow. Tell us about that one.
Oh, that photo was taken at around the Storm Emma. I actually walked, I'd say, about 10 miles that day, scanning every field I could see. And just coming up near my home and around the bend, I met this vixen. And she stopped and looked at me.
Yeah.
And I got the shot.
And then Ollie the Otter, you seem to have some sort of a relationship with Ollie the Otter.
Yeah, Ollie the Otter, yeah. He was taken in the River Shore in Tonnell. I kind of spent a few days with him and he just started relaxing me, like, and one day he actually got a fish and actually swam over and actually 2 feet away from me and actually looked up at me with the fish in his mouth and said, "Lord, to take my shot now," like.
Was he offering you the fish? Fish and chips? Yeah. It's
And there last year now, I did set myself a very difficult challenge to photograph all butterfly species in Ireland. And I completed it.
All what species?
12 months. I had to travel from the Burren to Wexford, from the Wexford back to the Burren and up to Kildare.
And what species did you say? All what species?
All 35 species of butterflies in Ireland.
Oh, did you? Right. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well done.
It was the most difficult task I did, like, don't mean. It was very, very challenging. I had to go and find the butterfly and then chase it and wait for it to land before I could get my photograph.
There's something lovely. We don't have a lot of butterflies where I am, but we were down in Waterford there, and whenever I went running, it seemed like I was chasing butterflies. That's what I don't know if there's a song called Chasing Butterflies, but I was singing it in my head, and they're a beautiful thing. There's a lovely little blue one that comes out around August. You've obviously photographed that.
Oh, I have, yeah. And the smallest butterfly in Ireland is actually down in Wexford. The small blue. You get them in different parts now as
yes.
Well. They're starting to spread out.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's another butterfly down in Wexford, the Essex Skipper. He's only found there.
Right. Listen, Clodagh, have you got a good picture of that little blue one? Because I'd take it from you.
I have loads.
Will you send it up to me and we'll work out a deal. I'll bargain with you. I've given away the 40 euro voucher for One for All, but we come up with some deal, okay?
The common blue. I reckon you're on a vote.
Okay. Have you got a website where people can look at your photography?
I haven't at the minute. No. I'm always being told to set up one, but I haven't yet. But it's on Facebook where I post a lot of my stuff.
Okay. And what's your day job, Clodagh?
I work in Kinnall in my local town. I'm a kind of an outdoor operator.
Right, an outdoor operator.
Yeah, keeping the town clean and things like that.
Oh, brilliant. Right, okay.
Yeah. I was actually on TV3 twice with my photography in Derland AM photography competition.
Well, you obviously have a talent for it, and well done again on that brilliant picture of the puffin with the fish in his mouth. Have you named the puffin at all? No.
No, I haven't come up with a name yet. No.
Patter. Let's call him Patter. Patter the Puffin.
Okay, Patter.
Right. Clodagh, great talking to you. Well done again. See you. Bye. Bye.
Thanks, Ray. Okay.
Yeah, thank you.
Bye,
thank you.
Bye,
that's Clodagh Blake there, amateur photographer from Tipperary. And that picture's in the Daily Mail if you want to see it today.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
51551, ray@rte.ie. Now, the next 20 minutes might be a difficult listen for some people because we're going to be talking about suicide. In studio with me is Fiona Toomey. How are you doing, Fiona?
Hi, you, Ray.
Thanks for coming in. And back in January of 2016, Millie, who was then 11, Fiona's daughter, died by suicide. And since then, Fiona has set up an organisation called HUG, Healing Untold Grief Groups. And she's looking for volunteers to help in HUG. And that's the reason she's here today. Now, this can never be easy, retelling Millie's story, Fiona, but for people who aren't familiar with it, tell us again.
Well, Millie was an exceptionally outgoing, funny little girl who had an abundance of gifts. She was really blessed with lots of talents, from playing the piano and good at sports, and made friends easily. So she really, you know, had the world at her feet. Previously showed no signs of any mental ill health or anything going on in her life. We had returned from living abroad, which obviously was a huge change. She settled into her new school like a duck to water. And everything was going swimmingly until around October 2015, Halloween time, when out of the blue, Millie had posted something on Instagram about a desire to die by suicide, which, of course, is completely shocking. And then you're balancing that up with it being a child and whether or not, how much weight do you put behind it, and what do you do with that information? And that led us on a path very quickly to engaging with the school, the GP, and looking for mental health support for Millie.
Yeah. And you've been on a number of programmes, The Late Late Show, and then on a sort of a big picture special, talking about the fact that CAMHS fell short when it came to helping you and Millie.
Oh, absolutely. They had, if you like, triaged Millie with an intake form that we all fill in. And it was red flagged on more than two occasions on the form. And a red flag means that somebody's at a high risk of suicide. And this information was left in an in tray for 11 days whilst we were on our Christmas break together, waiting for Millie's first appointment with them. So this had been flagged by them and then left aside with nothing given to us about how to keep somebody safe. So obviously we were in the dark.
Yeah. It's unimaginable what you've been through, yourself and Tim and Daisy. It's every parent's nightmare. How are you? It's 4 years, 4.5 years on now.
I think the best way to explain it, and anybody who has lost a child would know this, regardless of suicide, on, you know, being the cause of death, the sharpness goes out of it a little. That sharp, horrific early stages of grief softens. And then obviously it's every individual is different. For me, I think what I found the most difficult and I still struggle with is the enormity and permanence of it. The fact that it's forever and accepting that. Hmm. That's tough.
So you don't get over it?
No, no, you can't. You don't stop loving somebody, so how could you possibly get over it?
Yeah.
You learn to live with it. Hmm. And that's difficult. You know, you can't, there's no replacing it. And especially when it's a child, you're forever surrounded by milestones that she'll never reach.
Like she would have been 16 in February.
Exactly. Yeah. And she would have been queen of the Sweet 16 and I must do something American. So, yeah, all of those things. So, you know, when you keep up with her little friends and what they're doing. And, of course, they're not little friends anymore. You know, she was the second eldest of the cousins and now she's the youngest.
Mm. And her friends, you said you keep in contact with them. Is that not a constant reminder? Is that not painful?
It's not an active contact. It's a passive contact. Okay. And it's bittersweet because it's anything that's connected to a person you love is something that you crave, whether it's a photograph been found, which is like a precious gem, because there's never anything new. So even discovering something that's new that you haven't seen before is an absolute gem and a joy.
Yeah.
So whether I get a little message out of the blue from one of our friends abroad or at home, yeah, it's a pain, special. But it's a joy.
Yeah. I was watching the piece you did for that big picture that time, which was on mental health of young people. It was a special and you were in the audience that night. But you did a piece at home before that yourself and Tim. And Tim was saying he was haunted and he was numb. And when he was numb, he wanted the pain back because he didn't want to be over it.
Yeah.
Does that get any way easier?
Yes, I think it does. Because I think that bereavement as opposed to grief is your body goes into a shock, a numbness, I think, to protect you because you can't take it all in. It's too much for you actually to carry. It's too overwhelming. So you are numbed to a certain extent. And that numbness is literally to protect you so that piece by piece, the reality drips in.
Mm.
You never lose the pain, but it doesn't mean that you don't have pain 24 hours a day. You can have breaks in the pain. You learn that you are allowed to laugh and you are allowed to smile and you are allowed to have a good time with your friends. That doesn't detract from the person you love or lost. And it doesn't mean you've got over it or you've forgotten them. And I think there are things that you learn and you engage with. It's called grief work for a reason.
Yeah. And when does it hit you?
Oh.
Can you predict?
No.
Are there triggers or?
No, I think that's the one thing about grief is it's full of surprises. I mean, people say it's like the ocean, you know, the wave can hit you at any time and then you've got the calmness and you're trucking along okay. And people expect it to be the big days like the anniversaries and the birthdays. And of course they are days, but you anticipate them and you have coping mechanisms around them. But it can be a song or a favourite cereal in a supermarket or somebody with the same colour hair or a pair of sneakers that they wore. It can be the little tiny things, ordinary things in life that you can't protect yourself against.
So we're going to get on to HUG, and this is support for people who've been bereaved by suicide. When you sort of finally were able to look around out of that horrible sea of grief for help, was there help there?
No.
No.
There was nothing. And I think that's what I found even more shocking. I think I expected there to be an army of people to sort of
the cavalry
rush in,
yes,
you know, and
we're
hold you up
you.
And
yes.
help you and, you know, arm you with all sorts of things to help you through this. And we felt abandoned. It was like another slap in the face. We felt really let down. Nobody came to us. We were waiting for some sort of official something to happen. I don't know why, but I think you just do. You kind of think, well, we can't be possibly just left to deal with this.
Because it was national news.
Yeah.
And like Millie's photograph was in all the papers.
Yeah. And you're not told about that either.
No.
So you have to deal with, you know, publicity and then social media and people saying very strange things to you and your grief becomes public. And when it's suicide, it comes with whispered questions because people don't understand it and are afraid of it. Some people think it's contagious. So there's all sorts of misinformation out there. Mm. So you're dealing with all of that and shock and trauma, and there was no grief cavalry coming for us. So I went looking for it actively, very actively. And I eventually found a bereavement group in Athlone, which I drove to, and it was a lifesaver. Phil Robinson, who was there, literally, I put her down as having saved my life.
Right. That's a big thing to say.
Yep, she was marvellous. She gave me hope.
Although you say there's no contagion around suicide, people who are close to somebody who takes their own life through suicide are something like 7 to 10 times yep. more likely to do it themselves.
Yeah, so exactly.
So it is disappointing that there is no cavalry, that nobody in officialdom, you know, bothers to go and make sure that you're okay.
I think at that time there were a sequence of events happening nationally that didn't help us. The national suicide bereavement charity that was had imploded.
Console, yeah.
And so there was the gap there. You would have been okay if you wanted to go for counselling. And that's not what I was looking for. I was looking for coping mechanisms. I wanted to see another human being who had survived.
Yes.
And who was still alive and who was upright.
And that's what HUG does. And it's unique in that. That the people you were looking for today are people who've walked in your shoes, so to speak, people who've lost friends, family through suicide.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because exactly as you've said, it's shocking. I mean, what you learn and what I've learned, you know, since Millie died, you know, that if you're bereaved, you're up to 10 times more likely to die by suicide. The mental health impact that it has on you, the effect it has on your physical health and jobs and security and income and a whole raft of things. And I'm going, hang on a second, if these things are all so awful and dangerous on top of bereavement, on top of losing a child, why isn't somebody doing something? Yeah. So when I found out about this group and I went and it was marvellous and it helped me, I said, I can't keep driving up and down to Athlone, living in Dublin. It wasn't practical. So I got in touch with a wonderful lady called Carol Milton, who had lost her son through suicide many years previously. And she helped me set up a group and we called it HUG.
Yeah. Healing Untold Grief Groups. So there's two G's.
Two G's. Two G's. Very important. We're double G.
It's a big ask for somebody, isn't it, to volunteer for a group like this?
You know, it is and it isn't, because I think that anybody who's been bereaved by suicide, you only have to look at them. You don't need to exchange any words and they just know. You just have to see
each other. Face.
It's just there. Yeah. It's like, they say, it's like finding somebody who speaks the same dialect as you. Not the same language, the same dialect. And when you find that, the emotional release, it's like you've been holding your breath and then all of a sudden you can exhale. And that's incredibly powerful because everybody needs something different when they go through this sort of bereavement. And HUG is just one piece of that puzzle. So we got registered as a charity and we set out to say, okay, what do people need? Let's ask them, let's talk to them. I said, well, I wanted a group, so let's try groups. So we started off with one group and then we now have three groups. So we spoke to the HSE, we had a look. I went back to college to specifically study bereavement and loss. I wanted to arm myself with all of the information to make sure we were safe and we knew what we were doing. We looked at best practice abroad. We spoke with colleagues in Australia and America and England, and we knew what we were doing was working and it was needed, and we weren't replicating anything that was out there, which was very important, not to do what already is being done, which used to drive me nuts.
Yes.
So we said,
there's a lot of duplication in mental health over the years.
So we said, let's not reinvent the wheel. What is needed? Is it safe? Can we do it? And where do we go from here? So we're at the stage now where we knew that we needed to do this and then continue to do it. And we were constantly being asked by other people outside of Dublin, can you set up a group here?
Okay. So how do people contact you?
They contact us through the website. They can send an email to info@hug.ie. The most important thing to say, Ray, is we are looking for people who themselves have been bereaved by suicide at least 2 years previously.
And you will provide the training?
Everything. Absolutely everything that they need and want. It's structured, they're supervised, it's badly needed, and we desperately want people, Cork, Limerick and Kerry.
Okay. You said that the group thing worked for you. It didn't work for Tim.
No.
Right.
I think that, like everybody is different, there's different types of grieving. And there are what they call instrumental grievers. And instrumental grievers, they tend to think they're all men. They're not. I think I'm a bit of an instrumental griever. They're people who do.
So you channel your grief. You channel your grief.
You want to do something with it.
Yes.
So I started doing with it. And then there are intuitive grievers. And they're people who would have been seen more like women, where they would cry and they would do what was expected of them emotionally. And then there's blended grievers, people who do a mixture of the
both,
two.
Both, right. Yeah.
So...
And what's the theory behind instrumental grievers? Because I've met so many over the years, you know, and I suppose that's why there is a lot of duplication in mental mm-hmm. health, because a lot of people are driven, like yourself, mm-hmm. from a loss of a loved
yes.
one.
Yes.
And so they feel that they have to channel the grief into something
yes.
worthwhile.
Yes.
And that's therapy, is it? Is that sort of...
Well, I see it as, I mean, I would be very upfront and say it's therapy for me,
yeah.
but... It's not a vanity project. It's something that's needed. If I felt there wasn't a need for it, I wouldn't do it. So part of what we were also doing is we want to set out and say, does it make a difference to people's bereavement? So we engaged with the National Suicide Research Foundation, who are the national body who do all of the research into suicide prevention. And what people forget is postvention, which is what we're doing, what happens after a suicide, is prevention. It's a very important
because
part of
that,
prevention.
That statistic we talked about earlier on.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
And if it isn't research, which it isn't, there's so little on it, how can it possibly be improved?
Yeah.
So we've engaged with them to ask them to research us.
Okay. CAMHS then.
Yes.
Have things improved there?
No.
No.
No. I mean, that's another whole...
Who's in charge now? Who's the new minister?
Okay, you've got... you have the overall Minister for Health, who's Stephen Donnelly.
Yes.
And then you have his junior minister. And the junior minister is in charge of mental health and older people. And that's a lady by the name of Mary Butler. Now, everybody was hoping she'd be a super junior minister, which means she can sit at the cabinet and make decisions at cabinet. She's not. She's a junior minister.
Why have we got the mental health situation so wrong in this country for so long?
I think that's a programme that will go on for many, many hours,
right.
and I'm not qualified to answer all of that.
No,
but part of it is that it's not ring-fenced, and that mental health covers such a huge and wide, varied area that if it's political, it's going to change with every single government change. And within that, then, there isn't a ring-fencing of what goes towards suicide prevention, which is channeled through the National Office of Suicide Prevention
yeah.
and what stays in the mental health budget.
But you see, the National Office of Suicide Prevention have no teeth.
Correct.
You know, so they can't go and give out to CAMHS and sanction them for not doing
no.
their job.
No. I mean, the power lies in with the civil service.
Yeah.
Essentially, the power lies with the civil service to make the change. But with HUG, we intend to make the change on behalf of the suicide bereaved.
Okay. So info@hug.ie, and there's two G's in that. I'd imagine that these group therapies, the what ifs is, you know, that's a big topic of conversation,
yes.
is it? The what ifs.
How
do you cope with that?
It takes time. There isn't a magic answer. I think the most important thing within a group is you're not out to fix somebody.
Mm.
You can't fix. You can't magic it away. You're basically a grief Sherpa. You're exchanging experiences and what has been your experience, and that helps people. And the what if is never answered.
Yes.
And eventually you come to accept it.
How forensically do you go through the what ifs in your head?
I went through it incredibly forensically.
Like minutes, seconds?
Oh, everything. I have gone over it 1,000 times. I went into it in a scientific way. I went into it emotionally. I went into it upside down, inside out, you name it. If I was to say it, were there signs? Yes, there were signs. Was I aware of all the signs? No, I wasn't. Hindsight is 20/20. I despise that phrase.
Yeah.
But there are very simple things that people should be told and should know that are assumed, and nothing can ever be assumed. There are courses.
What are those things that people
should
be told?
Well, I mean, people sort of say, you know, how do you know if somebody is suicidal? You know, people talking about wanting to die. That's enough. People even talking about it. That's a red flag. People talking about giving away possessions. People perhaps, you know, not eating properly, not sleeping properly, or eating too yeah. much or drinking too much.
Isn't the worrying thing, though, and the worrying thing is, though, and you saw the red flags in Millie. You went to your GP. You even went to go private and there was nobody available. And then you were put on a waiting list for CAMHS. And the horrific thing is that a day after she died, she was due to see somebody in CAMHS. That's, you know, so you can tell people all of these things and you can shake the bushes and get people out to talk. But then if there's nobody for them to talk to, that's the, anyway.
Yeah, it's a massive problem.
Yeah. Okay. Mary Butler, she's Fianna Fáil, isn't she? Mary,
she is.
Yeah, we must get her in and see.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. And we're hoping that she's going to do good things because, unfortunately, the suicide rates are up.
Okay. Thanks so much for coming in. Mind yourself.
Thank you very much, Ray.
Fiona. We'll take a quick commercial break isn't it, before Nocht.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, if you were affected by anything we discussed there with Fiona Toomey, there's a national crisis text line. It's only 6 weeks old and I believe it's a very good service. You can text 50808, 50808 if you want to speak to somebody and they have qualified people on the other end of the line. But it starts off with a text to 50808. Okay, that's the National Crisis Text Line, 50808. That's funded by the HSE. Anish Tosha now in the Free Skelton and Oak Tilla, Marian Nihulawan. Gurmagat, Marian, thank you very much. Info at hug.ie and it's two G's and they're looking for a very specific type of person there to help spread their services around the country. And Fiona's a very strong woman. It was a privilege to talk to her. Now, something completely different. We were asking you to come up with a word for staycation because a lot of people don't like that word because it uses vacation, which is an American word. We don't use American words, what we do actually, and increasingly our young people are using more and more American words. Anyway, €40 for the person who can come up with the best alternative. Now, Holly Stay is loads of people. So if we do choose Holly Stay, we will have to put all the names into a hat and do a raffle type thing. But there are alternatives to that. Etna says, Holla Home. Holla Home. Holla Home. My suggestion is Leighton to Here. Leighton to Here. See what they've done there? As a play on the Irish for holidays, Leighton to Sierra. Didn't make it up. I read it somewhere, but it's a good one. That's Therese in Limerick. Leighton to Here. Home Hollier, says Rosari. Howie Rosari in Middleton and Cork. Staying to Sierra. That's a good one. I like Staying to Sierra. I like the Staying to Sierra one. That's Anna in Stillorgan. Holly Stops. Are you going near Holly Stops? There's sort of something fun about that. A Walia Day. A Walia Day, that's a day. Mike says that. How about Fonera? Aha, as in Stay in Ireland. That's Ian. Fonera. They're not bad. Holly Era, says somebody else. That's Ryan in Kilmallock. Sorry, Dominic Ryan in Kilmallock. Stayed me La Falcha. Stayed me La Falcha. That's Ian in Temple Oak. Breakation. You see, you're getting a bit of the vacation there, John Cassidy in Swords. They don't like that. Holly Roaming. Says Pat. Holly Hears, as I'm going on my Holly Hears. That's, I like the Holly Hears. Are you going on your Holly Hears? Irish Holiday, Sabbatical. Sabbatical. Oh, Sabbatical. Oh, Sabbatical. Sabbatical. Connor, yeah, a bit too cryptic for me. Hallowalia, that's not bad, instead of staycation. If I won't, I'd give it to, if I won't, I'd give it to St. Vincent de Paul, says Marie Ryan in Limerick. Holla Walia, it's a good one. Turris Walia to somebody else. And how about, this is an alternative staycation, Stay Era, Stara, Stara. Where are you going on your Stara this year? Could work. Mary. Thanks, Mary. Yours is the best because, as in, yours is the best, the most well thought out because you have it all there laid out and you put it in a sentence, which is always good for a new word. My suggestion, Fonillan. Ah, yeah, Fon on the island. Wait on the island, Fonillan. That's nice. Nearly poetic. Holly Walia. There's Holly Walia again for staying in Ireland. That's Paul O'Rourke. So there's a lot of... Niamh was going to... It was her suggestion. So she'll have to come up with the winner there from all that. No pressure, Niamh. No pressure. Oh, yes. Charlotte Regan might be able to do it. Yes, yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, we're at the business end of the All-Ireland Quiz again. Yes. The hand-carved wooden trophy is waiting for somebody and it will have a place this Friday because we're at the semi-final stages. Yes. Only four people, four counties left. What are we going to do next week? We won't be able to play this James last tune. Okay, it's Loud take on Kildare in the first semi-final. And we go to Canada, firstly, and to Bernard. How are you doing, Bernard Curley?
I am well, Ray from Kildare. How are you?
Wait now, Bernard, you're from Loud.
Yeah, no,
I'm Ray from Kildare. Sorry, I'm Ray from Kildare. Sorry, yes.
Ray, I know where I'm from. Do you know where you're
yeah,
from?
I do. Sorry. Right? Sorry, no, you confused me there. You said, hi, I'm
you know
from Kildare.
You know it's early in the morning over here, not over there. Yes. It's like 4 o'clock.
Yes.
You awake? What's going on, Ray?
Bernard Curley from Louth. I am Ray from Kildare. You were right, yes. How are you in Canada?
I'm all right. Yeah, I'm all right. How are you getting on?
You're coming in loudly and clearly. That's a great line. Whatever you're doing with your Wi-Fi or your WhatsApp or whatever. What has happened since we last spoke?
Well, since we last spoke, I got a bed and I assembled it and I went camping for a few days, Friday night and Saturday night.
Right.
That's the last thing we did since we spoke.
Whereabouts did you go camping?
I went camping, it's like 80 kilometres north of Vancouver. It was a place called Tat Lake. It was like near Squamish is the area. I think it was like a Native American, or well, Native kind of Canadian place first, if you kind of get me. But very interesting, lovely views, nice place.
Right.
Well, it was nice also.
Squamish. Was it a two-man tent or a two-person tent? Sorry, two-person tent.
Yeah, it was a two-person tent, but there was four people in it. So,
right.
Such is life.
Right. You're up against Mary Carter, who is also from Kildare. How are you doing, Mary?
Hello there, Ray, in Kildare.
Yes, yeah. Don't confuse me anymore.
Oh, I know. Mary, I know the feeling.
Say hello to Bernard.
Hiya, Bernard. I was having a lovely afternoon having tea and cakes, and then I got a phone call.
Oh, right. And then the nerves kicked in and you couldn't enjoy your cakes.
Oh, Jesus. I couldn't. All I could think of is, where is Bernard? Is he in Saskatchewan or is he in Nova Scotia?
She's been doing her homework. You've been doing your homework, Mary.
No, it's all I could hear is Sarah Palin. That's all she ever said. Saskatchewan or Nova Scotia.
There's nothing worse than eating on a nervous tummy.
Oh, God, no.
No. I think it's way back to our ancestors, because if you're nervous, you don't want to load your tummy up with food, because you probably have to run. So you have to be
sitting very close to the loo.
Yeah, yeah.
Or back in the day, was it a bucket, Ray? You remember that.
Okay. Now, I'm looking at your age here. Don't get cheeky.
No, I know. You're younger than me. I know.
Ever so slightly.
Just a little bit,
yeah.
So you don't judge a woman by her age anyway.
No. It's your attitude.
I
believe you've been accused of winging it, or maybe that was you confessed to it yourself when it comes to the quiz.
How very dare you. How very dare you. Winging it, I never. What is not usually what people from there do? We wing it.
We wing it. Yeah, I've been doing it for years. Haven't been found out.
Figured it out yet?
Yeah. Okay. So you've got to the final four, ye two of 32, which is a great achievement. So congratulations on that.
Woo!
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah.
it's mad, isn't it, Mary? That Bernard sounds closer to me than you do, and you're only down the road.
Well, actually, I'm actually up in Dublin at the moment. I'm with some friends, so that's probably why the signal isn't as good as it could be.
Okay. Right. Bernard representing Loud, this is your motivational music. Light in my head. Woo! You in my arms.
Fuck it.
Great choice, the Waterboys and Fisherman's Blues. And for you, Mary from Kildare.
Mia. Here I go again. How can I resist you? Mamma Mia.
Oh, no.
Does it show again? Mama, just how much I missed you.
Hey!
No, Ray, I missed you last week, Ray.
I missed you too. I actually did miss being on the radio. And now we've two live ones here. Good luck to you both.
One of you will
bring your county into the final of the All-Ireland quiz. Let's get some tension going. Okay, Bernard, your first question is this. What county's car registration displays the letters KY? Kilkenny or Kerry? KY.
Go for Kilkenny.
It's the other one. Kilkenny is KK, Kerry is KY.
Ah, yeah.
Mary, similar question for you. What county's car registration displays the letter W? Wexford or Waterford?
Waterford.
Is correct answer. Wexford is WX.
Wexford's WX.
Okay,
yeah.
You're into an early lead. Bernard, back to you. Second question is an audio question. Can you name the film that this song comes from? Here we go.
Chim chiminy, chim chiminy, chim chim chiri. A sweep is as lucky can be. Chim chiminy, chim chiminy, chim chim chiri. Good luck, we're above when I shake hands with you.
Well,
Mary Poppins
is the correct answer. That's Dick Van Dyke singing away there. And for you, Mary, which movie is this from?
I just flew in from the Windy City. The Windy City is mighty pretty, but they ain't got what we got. No siree.
You!
Oh, God, that's Doris Day. It's Calamity Jane.
No, it's Oklahoma.
Oh, it's Oklahoma. I thought it was Calamity Jane.
Oh, it is Calamity Jane. Sorry, it is Calamity Jane. You're right. It is Calamity Jane.
Jesus, don't scare me.
You're right. You're right. It is. Sorry about that.
You're all right.
Okay. Right. Question number three for you, Bernard. What name is given to a male gerbil? A bull, a buck, or a boar? A male gerbil.
A bull, a buck, or a boar?
A boar, jeez.
Need an answer.
I'll go for a boar.
It's a buck. A buck. And for you, Mary, similar question.
Yep.
What name is given to a female mink? A sow, a doe, or a hind?
I guess a hind. I don't know, right?
It's a sow. It's a sow. Yeah. Okay. Right. So, Bernard, you're on one. Mary, you're on two. Question number four for you, Bernard. Another audio one. Can you name this band?
But I don't feel like dancing when the old gentleman in a place.
Who's that there?
The Scissor Sisters.
It is. I Don't Feel Like Dancing from 2006. And for you, Mary, who is this?
Don't you wish your girlfriend was wrong like me? Don't you wish your girlfriend was fun like me? Don't you?
Who's that there?
That's the Pussycat Dolls.
It is indeed, from 2005. Okay, now, as we approach our final question, Bernard, you're on two. Mary is on three. If you go for the one-pointer, you're the same as Mary, but she does have a question in hand. If you go for the three-pointer, get it right, you're on five. Puts Mary under an awful lot of pressure to go for the three-pointer, which is difficult, more difficult than the one-pointer. So what's it going to be, Bernard?
Oh, we'll go for the three, right?
You sort of have to, don't you? Okay, for 3 points, keep you in the competition. Here it is. Which of these Irish counties is smallest in size? Wicklow, Kilkenny, Waterford or Derry?
Waterford.
Waterford, you say? Wicklow, 2,027 square kilometres. Kilkenny, 2,073 square kilometres. Derry, 2,075. Waterford is the correct answer. 1,857 nice. Square kilometres. Brings
wow.
you up to 5 points. Mary Carter,
wow.
you're
I
under pressure.
Yes, indeedy.
You do. There's no choice really here. We can go for the one-pointer and sort of be, you know, lose by 1 point. But
I'll go for the three. Right?
Yeah, you go for the 3 points. Okay. Good luck with this then. This will bring you into the final, or else Bernard qualifies for Louth into the final of the All-Ireland quiz. Which of these European islands is largest by total area?
Oh,
Corsica, Sicily, Cyprus or Crete? So which is largest by total area? Corsica, Sicily, Cyprus or Crete?
I haven't a clue. I guess Sicily.
That's a guess.
Absolute.
Right.
Winging it, Ray.
Crete, just over 8,000 square kilometres. Corsica, just less than 9,000 square kilometres. Cyprus, just over 9,000 square kilometres. Sicily is 25,000 square kilometres. And the correct answer, giving you 3 points.
Oh, my God.
There you, well, you're, if you're winging it, you're good at it. You're a
Jesus
good winger.
Almighty.
Bernard.
Oh, Ray.
Bernard Curley, commiserations.
Thank you, Ray.
Bernard, sorry, but...
And no, congratulations, well done.
Yeah,
thanks, Bernard.
You did really well there. You did really well. Really enjoyed your company over the last few weeks.
Yeah.
So good luck in Canada.
And Ray, can I just say, I was the last time we were speaking, you were on the RTE comic relief.
Oh, Tess, yes.
Just thought that that was very good. Got me thinking, you work well when you're part of a duo. You should give me a job and then I can come back home.
It wouldn't be my decision.
Tell you what, give me a job and I'm closer.
Look, everybody can have a job. Everybody can have a job. Bernard, I will give that due consideration and I'll talk to my management team about that and see what happens. But for the moment, good luck in Canada.
You're a good man.
All right, you're a good man too. Very funny man. See you, Bernard. Bye now. Bye. I think we'd be hearing more about Bernard Curley from Louth. Mary Carter, we will be hearing more from you this Friday in the final of the All-Ireland quiz. Yes!
I need a lie down.
Go for it. We'll talk to you on Friday. Girlfriend. Mind yourself. Take See you. Bye, bye, bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, Jarlath O'Regan. There's no O in it, is there?
There's no O in it.
How did I do that? I did that before with somebody else. Anyway, Jarlath Regan, sorry about that.
Not at all. I don't mind, Ray.
There's a lot going on here. You can have an O if you want it. How are things?
Pretty good. Pretty good. Hanging in here in London in lockdown.
Yeah.
Dying to get home.
And have you got a studio set up there where you do your Irish Man Abroad podcast from?
I do. And we had the beautiful nightmare of the laptop going to heaven this morning.
Oh no.
It decided it was finished and would be no more. So yeah, home studio, and that's where everything happens. All the magic happens there.
Right.
Until I get a new laptop, I suppose.
Now, I've spoken to a number of comedians over the last few months, and this isn't scientific, Jarlath, but I think about 80% of them said they wouldn't do an online gig.
Yeah.
But you're going to do one.
Well, yeah, look, I was with them. I was with them all the way. And then I suppose there's a lot more of these online gigs over here. And I reluctantly agreed to do one. And then you realize, hold on a minute, there's a front row here. There's 15 people in the front row who you interact with.
Right.
And it is, you know, via telecommunications, the information superhighway. You're not in the room, but you are getting feedback. So you don't really perform stand-up per se. But it does work, and it's possible that it could work. And I hooked up with a couple of listeners of the show. Lockdown Events is an events company that was previously Bricks and Mortar Events and are now, you know, trying to save their careers by doing these online events. And they've put together a thing for me and the Irish Man Abroad online monthly comedy club. And we did one last month with Deirdre O'Kane and Danny from the Coronas and Aaron Heffernan. And it really worked, right?
Right. Explain to me and our listeners about the front row.
So the front row works basically like most of the show is streamed to the thousands of people across the world that tune in, who buy a ticket, they get a password and a link to their stream.
Uh-huh.
But then the front row would be the patrons of Irish Man Abroad or the people that get in touch and say, oh, I'd love to be there in the room. They get to be on the Zoom call.
Very clever.
Faces are visible down the bottom.
I see.
So they have the opportunity to heckle. But here's the beautiful bit for the comedians. I can mute them if they get out of hand.
But that's very clever. So you're doing a sort of a Zoom call with these handpicked people. And then you're streaming as well.
We stream that. Yeah.
Brilliant.
I mean, it sounds when I say that Zoom call, it doesn't look like a Zoom call because these fellas at conference services and lockdown events know what they're doing. So they do make it look a lot more like a James Corden late night show from his home. So as you say, the home studio here is set up. We've got the lights and the HD camera and the whole lot, and they do the graphics and everything. It is remarkable what can be done now that previously you would have had to go to RTE to do.
Yeah.
So we've kind of made a late night show version of Irish Man Abroad. And this week we've got Imelda May, Keith Barry, Siobhan McSweeney from Derry Girls and Al Ford, the man of 1,000 voices on the show.
And they're in their homes, zooming to you. Yes, yes.
Yeah, it's mad. It is mad. And, you know, it is one of those ones where it's experimental. And look, we all want a gig experience. But what people have told me, and this is the thing, the feedback you get on these shows is way bigger than anything that you would have got from a normal gig where everybody just disappears into the night. People are really grateful because for a lot of people, the gig experience is a long way off. I mean, I'm shielding my own wife here. She's in a vulnerable position and we give anything. to go to a pub. And I know pubs are open, but there's plenty of people that can't go to them. So if you want to have that feeling, a few cans, a glass of wine on the couch with a pizza and a live gig happening in your house with the likes of Imelda May and Keith Barry, as I said, this is it. It's a fiver. Yeah, yeah. You get your ticket, you're streaming, off you go.
That's the cost of a pint.
That's it. And the whole family gets to go. This is the thing. You're not paying a fiver a man.
thelockin.io/Irishmanabroad. And it's happening July the 14th, which is when? That's
Tuesday, 8 o'clock kickoff. And we'll be on air and rolling at 8 o'clock, yeah.
Right. How many people did you get the last time, do you mind me asking?
Well, Irishman Abroad itself, week to week, has about a million downloads every week. Yeah. And, you know, Ray, if we even got 1% of that, think about it.
I know. I'm doing the maths here.
All I'll say is this, that loads of comics are struggling right now and they do need support. And now I get that Imelda May and Keith Barry, Al Foran, and these people aren't part of that struggling crew. But what I'm trying to build here is a place where comics can work and earn and support the community and get behind them.
Yes.
So when we talk about funding the arts, I mean, we can all do it. Come to a gig, come to an online gig like this, and we can hopefully extend this to more than once a month and do something and allow Irish comedy to keep going through this, because we really don't know when we're coming out.
And we were speaking to Dermot Kennedy, and he's doing a live gig later on in the month from the Natural History Museum in London. See, I don't worry too much about you and him. What I do worry about is the lad who was playing in the local pub. Anyway, that's another that's another day's
Of the comics are playing local pubs too, right? Yeah. This is the thing. And that's why we're putting music on it.
Wait, 20 seconds to pick the winner of our They Don't Like Staycation. So you have a list there of the alternatives to staycation. And the winner is...
Staying to Sarah, I think.
I'm with you on that. Now, that came in from a number of listeners, so we're going to have to put all those names into a hat and pick one out, and we'll announce the winner tomorrow. Jarlath Regan, thelockin.io/Irishmanabroad, next Tuesday, July 14th. Tickets fiver. You can be in the... No, you can't be in the front row, but you can watch the whole thing, and Imelda May and other people are there. Jarlath, great to talk to you.
Thanks a lot.
Mind yourself.
Ray,
okay, bye. That's it from us. Damien O'Reilly is on the way. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday evening.